experiment. I've never actually lectured on this before, but I thought it'd be cool and it seemed to fit with the theme. So I've changed the theme of this course since I've taught it in the past to focus more on these problems of drawing and embedding planar graphs and their relationships to liftings of planar graphs. And I couldn't really do that without giving a more in-depth treatment of these Kobe embeddings I described, which are the circle packing embeddings of a graph. So that's where we're going to get to. And this goes by several names. So I like to call them just Kobe embeddings, because for a long time that's all they were called. Then this guy, Bill Thurston, who was one of the great geometer topologists of our time, gave a talk where he basically just said, oh, by the way, you know, that whole Kobe embedding theorem is just a consequence of this other theorem called Andreev's theorem. And so then people said, oh, maybe we should call them Kobe-Andreev embeddings. But then they said, well, you know, Andreev didn't even know this was, you know, a consequence of this result, so we should call them Kobe-Andreev-Thurston embeddings. And this is great, because once you have three names, then you can just get rid of all of them. And if you look for it on Wikipedia, you search for Kobe embeddings, you'll get the circle packing embeddings. Because once you have too many names, everyone just gets tired of saying them all or remembering them all. You know, some of the theory of empty completeness, I think. Cook's theorem is sort of going this route a little bit. It's Cook's theorem, and Cook-Levin theorem, and then somebody else prove it. And suddenly names start getting attached to it real fast. But all good ideas get rediscovered many times. And this is a good idea. To start with, though, we're going to need to recall Euler's formula for the plane. And in fact, I'm not going to give a full proof of the existence of Kobe embeddings. I'm going to give you the sketch of how one would prove it, because there's some steps in there that are really not worth doing in a classroom setting. But I'm going to do it from a slightly different perspective than you'll find in the textbooks. And it comes down to what's called polyhedral curvature. But to get there first, just recall Euler's formula. Well, for the plane, it was, this number of vertices minus the number of edges plus the number of faces equals 2. For planar graphs, for embeddings of planar graphs, we wrote this actually in a slightly more nuanced way. We did this 1 plus the number of connected components. And so if it's connected, as long as it's a nice connected graph, this is going to be 2. And this part over here is usually called the Euler characteristic, and this is the Euler characteristic of the plane. So if you decompose the plane into vertices, edges, and faces, so the graph of the vertices and edges is connected, you get this. And so it allows us to take the plane, which is a continuous space, and if you describe it by some discretization, some discrete set of vertices, edges, and faces, that no matter how you discretize it, you're going to get the same number. So this is what we call a topological invariant. But the property just of the underlying space, not, and it's independent of how we describe that space. It's one of the simplest and maybe the first, let's say, topological invariant. All right, now, if we have abstractly, if we have a set of vertices, edges, and polygons. Now, it's not necessarily in the plane, but we just have vertices, edges, and some of these edges we say make polygons. Where these polygons are flat, the polygons themselves are geometric, but they don't live in the plane, they live in a plane. Then we can talk about the curvature of a vertex. So I'm going to use big K of E. This is going to be the sum of the angles. This is going to seem a little weird. It's actually 2 pi minus the sum of the angles of faces at. Okay, so if I have, for instance, some little like this, if this is V, and imagine I actually pulled V out of the board. So if all these points are in the board, then the sum of these angles would be 2 pi. And so 2 pi minus that would be 0, which makes sense because that would be saying that the curvature of the flat board is 0. Flat, no curvature. Okay, that makes sense. If I pull this out of the board, what happens is all these angles get smaller. So the sum of those angles is going to be less than 2 pi. So 2 pi minus something less than 2 pi is going to be positive. You get some positive curvature. In order to get negative curvature, I would have to have some kind of saddle, where maybe I pull some of these up and some of them down to make some of these angles bigger.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
You don't count the outer face?
I do. In this case, I'm counting the outer face. And I am, in order to count the, so at the outer face, I'm still going to count the angle as you expect. So this is an important point. Say this is the outer face, right? I had some shape here. This outer face, I'm going to add this angle, and this one. So it's flat, but there is curvature at the vertices of the outer face, because it has to bend around and go to the other side. You can think of this as, without the outer face, this sits nicely in the plane, and then the outer face comes on top of it. And that's why the outer face kind of completes it to a sphere. Topologically.
And sometimes with this definition, if we have both, maybe the sum is greater than 2 pi.
The sum of the angles at a vertex?
Yeah.
So even without holes, you can have the sum of the angles greater than 2 pi. But not in the plane. So here's an example. Let's see if I can draw a nice little saddle here. You know what I mean by saddle point? Like, what's a classic function you learn in multivariable calculus that has a nice saddle? It's like just x times y or something. What does z equals? Is that right? What's the graph of z equals x, y look like?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think that's right. I think that's right. So let me try to draw that function first of all. That's a function that has a saddle here, so it looks like, right, it's a, I'm not sure you're going to be able to see this. So it's a surface that comes in like this and comes down like this. If you have surfaces like this, these are points of negative curvature. If I discretize it and I just have a triangulation, let's just say I have this triangulation. If I move this vertex, if I give this vertex a height, plus one, minus one, then I'm stretching out this triangle. This angle is going to be bigger than 90 degrees. You know, same thing, again, all of them are going to get stretched the same way. I'm going to have 4 angles that are bigger than 90 degrees, and their sum is bigger than 360. Okay, so that's how you get points of negative curvature on a polyhedral surface. Okay. So this is going to play a role. Let me just give you something like Oh, now I have to actually state the Gauss-Bonnet theorem and something like a proof of it. So here's the Gauss-Bonnet formula for polyhedral surfaces. So now what I had was, I assume that someone told me what the faces were. Usually, so far in this class, we started with a planar graph. We said, draw the graph, find the faces. So the one case we didn't do this was we said that if it was a three-connected planar graph, then those faces were uniquely determined anyway. And here I'm assuming that not only are the faces determined, but someone gave me the geometry of the individual faces. They said, here's the polygon which makes up that face. The Gauss-Bonnet theorem says that if you have those vertices edges and faces and they form some polyhedral surface, and it doesn't even have to be nice, it can intersect itself. We see that in the plane already where the outer face in some sense intersects all the other faces. It just has to glue together everywhere nicely. Then you have the following wonderful property, which is that the sum over all the vertices of the curvature is just equal to 2 pi times the Euler characteristic. And so for planar graphs, we know for connected planar graphs, we get the same Euler characteristic for the plane, but now you can do all kinds of other graphs. Like you can take a triangulation of a torus and you'll get a different answer. For a triangulation of a torus, you're going to have a different Euler characteristic, in fact. But it's still the case that for any triangulation of a torus, the number of vertices minus the number of edges plus the number of faces is going to be some constant. It won't be 2 in this case. This is the Euler characteristic for the plane. But the Euler characteristic for whatever polyhedral surface you have is related to the curvature. Right, now, this is pretty easy to see for the special case that we care about for now, which is just triangulated surfaces. So assume all the faces are triangles. I should mention that this polyhedral version is actually a special case of a smooth version, so any kind of smooth manifold. You can define an Euler characteristic. And there you actually have to integrate the curvature along the whole surface. And again, it just comes out to 2 pi times the Euler characteristic. Maybe the easiest version of this that you've seen is the sphere itself. So spheres have constant curvature. So it's the curvature at every point on a sphere is 1 over the radius of the sphere. This is the Gaussian curvature. And so if I'm integrating over the surface of the sphere, of a constant function, it's just going to be the surface area of the sphere times that constant. And the surface area of the sphere is 4 pi. And the Euler characteristic of the sphere is 2. So that's the simplest version of this, where the curvature is everywhere constant. You can check this also if you want to just work this out for simple cases like a cube at every vertex of a cube, what do you have? 390 degree angles. So you have what, pi over 2 curvature at every vertex, pi over 2 times 8 vertices, it's 4 pi. Right? And the cube is has the same topology as the sphere. Alright, so let's do this proof. Alright. So the definition says what the sum of V in V, K of V. I want to show that this is equal to 2 pi times the Euler characteristic. Well, this is just equal to the sum of V in V of 2 pi minus the sum of all faces incident to V of the angle of the face F at V. And this thing, of course, if I want to take, I'm sorry, this is all in for every vertex. Now, if I push the sum through, what I get is that this should be 2 pi times v minus, this is the sum over all the vertices and then the sum over all the faces. You can invert, you can change the order of summation because addition is commutative. So that's like just taking the sum over all the faces and looking at all the vertices of every face instead of looking at each vertex and the faces of each vertex. So that's the sum equal to this sum of all f in f, sum of v incident to f, again, the angle of f. Okay. But this, this is now a polygon with some number of sides. So the sum of the angles in a polygon with some number of sides, if I have k sides, the sum of the interior angles is just k minus 2 times pi. So this is equal to sum over all f in f of number, the size of f is just the number of edges in that polygon, minus 2 times pi. Okay. And now if I'm going to sum all the faces, I'm going to sum the sizes of all the faces. That's just summing all the edges twice. Right? Because I'm counting each edge from the perspective of the face on each side. So it's double counting the edges. So it's a simple double count. We have 2 pi times v minus this first term. If I break this apart, it's going to be 2 pi times e. And the last term is minus 2 pi times, or the sum of all faces of just 2 pi. So that's plus 2 pi times the size of f. So this is equal to 2 pi. Oh, I take it back. This isn't just triangulated surfaces. Alright, yeah. And these would all be 3 if I was limiting to triangulated surfaces. At some point we'll limit ourselves to triangulated surfaces, but I haven't done it yet.
What do you mean by putting the size of f?
The number of edges in the face, or number of vertices, which is the same. It's a polygon.
Oh, number.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you've seen this before, for instance, triangle has some of the angles in a triangle is pi, some of the angles in a quadrilateral is 2 pi. Some of the angles in a pentagon is 3 pi. You guys remember that from high school? Shake your head. Any Eddie Izzard fans? Anyone heard of Eddie Izzard? A couple nods, all right. Good comedian. It's a funny bit that I always want to do in class, which is where he tells something that sounds absurd, but maybe it's true. And then he goes, yeah. And he does that for like 5 minutes, and it's still funny after 5 minutes. It's incredible. Alright, so that's Gauss-Bonnet for polyhedral surfaces. And you can see it really is just.
I have questions.
Yeah.
So, what do you call that AB?
The curvature of B. This is the discrete curvature of V.
But that's a measurement of the angle?
It's also called the angle defect.
Okay.
Because it's the difference from between what it would be if it was flat and what it actually is. What the angles locally, if everything was flat, it would add up to 2 pi. But it doesn't. So it's got some defect. That's why it's called the angle defect or the discrete curvature. Jack, does that answer your question? All right.
Yes.
Do you have another question?
No.
Okay. Great, let's do something with it. Just remember it, it's going to come back. First, let's say what the Kobe embedding is. Remember that the input is a planar graph, planar. Like, let's say with a planar, 3-connected triangulated. So by triangulation here, I just mean that it's a graph. Any way you draw it, every face is a triangle. I don't mean in the sense that it is already drawn as a triangulation. Sometimes we just call it a triangulated graph. And the output is going to be an embedding of a graph. As a circle packing. So every vertex, I have to decide not just where to put it, but what radius of a circle to draw there. So each vertex has a position and a radius. And two circles are tangent if and only if there's an edge in the graph. These two circles say there's going to be a circle CI and CJ if and only if VI is VI EJ is in the X-site, right? Where these circles here are, I should really give these names. So each vertex VI has a position PI and a radius RI in the circle. CI is defined to be just the circle with center PI and radius RI. So if I just gave you a graph like this, if I give you a graph like this, a Cobie embedding of this graph might be something like this. Has anyone seen these before? Just around? Maybe not named as Cobie embeddings? You've seen them before? Good. That's important.
Just like circle padding?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, doesn't Erdos work on that one? Or Yusuf?
I wonder if Erdos had results on circle.
I don't know if this graph here. Oh, yeah, he probably did actually do a lot of graphics. But yeah.
So you've seen pictures of these? I feel like I should have brought in some pictures. Because what I can draw on the board is kind of boring compared to when you see these really big ones, someone's packed a ton of circles, they're kind of impressive. All right, so that's the Cobie embedding. If we want to find one, it turns out that it really just suffices to find out these radii. Like I said, we have to figure out where to put the points, but if you get a set of radii, then that's enough. So let me just try to give you, to convince you of that, to start. If I give you the radii, I claim you can at least find the angles in any drawing. And for that, I'll just remind you of the law of cosines. Who knows the law of cosines off the top of their head? No? Who's heard of the law of cosines? It's the law. Yeah. What is it? It's like
b squared minus 2ab times cosine c.
Yes, exactly. So
that's pretty good.
It's the law of cosines tells you how much a triangle differs from a right angle. You know, if it's a right angle, you've got c squared equals a squared plus b squared by the Pythagorean theorem. But this isn't true if it's not a right angle. If the angle theta is not a right angle, in general, you get minus 2ab cos theta. Okay, so if it's a right angle, cos theta is 0 and this term disappears, but if it doesn't disappear, then this hangs around. This is nice because what it tells us is that if you know a, b, and c, if you know the three lengths of the edges in a triangle, you can find any one of the angles. And just in pictures, if I gave you three radii for a circle, you draw one circle and draw another circle tangent to it. Well, I could put the third circle for a given radius on either side, but won't change the angles, won't change the triangle up to congruence. And so I can use this where now I've got side, if these are radii R1, radii R2, and R3, I've got something like A equals R1 plus R2, B equals R2 plus R3, and C equals R1 plus R3. Those are the lengths of the three edges in the triangle, and all the angles now are fixed. So once I know all the angles, or I know all the side lengths, I've fixed all the angles, I can essentially draw this triangle and cut it out of wood. You can think of it like a puzzle piece. So for every triangle now, if I, once I fix the radii, I can have a bunch of wooden triangles, and now my job is just to glue them together. And I claim that if we have the radii right, and when I just put them down like a puzzle, they will all connect nicely. So I have a triangle, and I have another triangle. So I start with just the first triangle, and now I have another triangle that has this edge. So I can just put that triangle down right here, and I have exactly one other triangle that contains this edge. I draw that one, and I can keep going like this, and keep putting down triangles. Or if I went another way, I'm going to at least claim for now that this doesn't happen, that I don't end up with some weird situation where if I go one way, things go bad, and if I go the other way, I intersect. And this is another case of kind of a deeper result, which we've been hinting at, but I really don't want to do in class. Is a case where as long as things are locally good, they're globally good. And for planar graphs, that's really the case. It has to do with the fact that these faces, you can actually write this out in linear algebra, where you look at the space of all cycles in the graph, and you can write them as sums of faces. And because of the fact that the planar graph, when it's embedded, doesn't have any holes, you can always shrink these cycles until they disappear. It has to do with the topological simplicity of these planar graphs. But like I said, for now we're just going to assert that nothing bad happens. So locally good implies globally good, and we're going to see that creep in again at some point later. So why is this? What is this locally good condition that I actually want, though? It's going to be that the sum of the angles that are in vertex add up to pi, 2 pi rather. And so this is going to be the flatness condition. So we want to find, once we fix the radii, we can actually compute for a given radii, so let's call it r, and it's a vector, r1 to rn. There is a mapping which takes me to, for any vertex, I can say phi r of that vertex is the sum of the angles at V given this set of radii. Right? So from the radii, I can get the individual angles, and I can sum up all the angles at a vertex, and that gives me the sum, and so the curvature at V, or we'll call it K sub R of V, because given this assignment of radii, I get a curvature, and that's just 2 pi minus pi, sigma R of V. Any questions on this before I go on?
So that follows from the this equation, right? KV equals.
That's the definition. Yeah, that's the definition of the curvature, right? Definition of the curvature is 2 pi minus this, and this sum here, is a function of the radii arrow. So assuming, once I pick a set of radii, I get a curvature. And this is going to do two things for me. One is going to at least point me in the direction of a proof that such an embedding even exists. And then second, it's going to give me a direction to look for an algorithm to compute these embeddings. So let me try this to state this local to global thing. So if we glue the triangles together edge to edge, and the sum or sigma r of v equals 2 pi, right? Equivalently, the curvature is 0. Adds all the interior vertices. Then we have a cohomology. Or at least we can find one, because we're just going, because the gluing process is just fixing one. If I have a Kobe embedding and I translate it or rotate it or move it around, it's still a Kobe embedding. So obviously all the rigid transformations preserve this property of being a nice Kobe embedding. In fact, there's a whole other space of transformations called Mobius transformations, which also preserve this Kobe embedding property.
What do you mean by interior vertices?
Ah, right. So if I'm gluing these together, there's going to be one face, which is going to be the outer face.
Okay.
At some point, we're going to have an outer triangle, and that's the triangle. That triangle is going to be the outer face.
So you're gluing two triangles based on one edge.
Yeah.
So the two vertices opposite to that particular edge are the exterior vertices?
No, I mean that this is going to be my triangulation in the end. Something like this. These are the exterior vertices. The curvature we saw is not really going to be zero. In fact, what we'll do is we'll fix one outer face. So we know one of these triangles is going to be our outer face, and any drawing of it is going to be an outer face. And so we'll just fix one of the triangles and say this is going to be our outer face. And what we'll do is we'll also try to force not just the interior ones to be 2 pi, but the interior ones we want pi r of v to be 2 pi over 3. So that will make this an equilateral triangle. Right? Because you'll have pi over 3 from all the interior faces, and then the outer face is another pi over 3. So the goal is to have a vector of angles at the vertices, which is called x star, should be 2 pi over 3, 2 pi over 3, 2 pi over 3, and then everything else is 2 pi. Okay, where now what we're doing is we could take this function f from the space, before I find out, let me tell you the spaces we're going to work with. We're going to have S, which is the set of all radius vectors, and let's limit ourselves to radius vectors where this radii sum to 1. Because if I have a Kobe embedding and I just scale everything up by some constant factor, it's still just a Kobe embedding. So let's normalize it by saying sum ri is 1, and I obviously want the radii to be non-negative. And this is really just it's called S because this is really just a simplex. And now we also have this space of angles, which is also an n-dimensional space, one for each vertex, and it's going to be the set of all x such that the sum of xi is equal to 2n minus 4 times 5. Does anyone know what this 2n minus 4 is? Does anyone remember? 2n minus 4 is the number of triangles in a triangulation. Since I have a little bit of this formula up here, let me just use it again to remind you that if you have a triangulation, that then 3 times the number of faces is equal to 2 times the number of edges. So if I plug this in here, I get to this formula, I will get that number of faces. This is, it's a triangulation, of course. The number of faces is 2 times the number of vertices minus 4. So that's 2n minus 4. And so the sum of the angles in a triangle is pi, and there's 2n minus 4 triangles, so if I sum up all the angles in the triangles, I should get 2n minus 4 times pi. So this condition is... is going to be satisfied for this particular function where from S to H, where F of R is just equal to this vector sigma R of V1 to sigma R of Vn. Okay, so it takes a assignment radii and gives us a collection of vectors. And the goal, of course, is to say that there exists a co-embedding, says there exists some R such that F of R is equal to X star. That would give us a co-embedding. And similarly, if you want an algorithm that searches for R, searches for N particular R such that F of R is equal to this, then we're going to look at this as a problem of flattening out the curvature where will we find it. So we're not going to prove this, but it's a fact that F here is a bijection, not into H, but it's a bijection into subset, but really it's a whole polyhedron, if you like, but there is technically bounded, polytope P star in H, defined by the following constraints. Well, the first constraint is the one just that defines H, so it has to be the case that the sum of the xi's, where the xi's again are the sum of the angles, xi is the sum of the angles at vi. This should be equal to 2n minus 4. Times pi, and also the constraint that for all proper subsets of 1 to n, it should be the case that the sum of those xi's is strictly less than, I'm going to write it like this at first, this f of I is the number of faces that touch vertices in this subset. So this is the number of faces F such that VI is in F for I in I. So this seems like a kind of a weird condition, but really this condition was connected to a kind of global flatness, where flatness now is a kind of average flatness. When you sum the curvature over the whole thing, you should get the topology of the plane. So it should be globally flat. The summing is an averaging operation, right? And so this condition says that, well, not only is it sort of globally flat, but for any local patch, any subset of vertices, you look at all the faces that touch those vertices, and those faces are all triangles. So the sum of those angles also is actually, the curvature is only strictly non-negative. So globally flat everywhere, locally non-negative curvature. And that's gonna once you know that, once you show that this is a bijection, then you have, just have to check that our x star over there is in this polytope. That this condition really does hold for our particular x star, and then it'll imply that there exists some pre-image of x star, which is the radius assignment. It doesn't give us an algorithm yet, but it at least gives us an existence. Okay, so first thing you have to check is that f of I is greater than 2 times I. As long as the size of I is less than or equal to n minus 3. Okay, so if I'm looking at this subset of indices, you could also think of it as just a subset of vertices. So I have a subset of vertices. If I only throw out one or two of the vertices, and then I ask which faces touch at least one of these vertices, I still get all the faces. And this condition is trivially true for those faces. Because I did was not count some of the faces on the left-hand side. So this thing just goes down. But if I have if I throw out at least three, I claim that a number of faces that touch that subset of vertices is at least twice the size of the subset. Okay. I think if you're interested, you can work that out. So what do we have to check now? We have to check that this condition now holds for x star. Actually, the first condition, do you believe the first condition holds for x star? Let's do it out. The sum x star I, for I, again, I equals 1 to n, is equal to what? It's equal to 3 times 2 pi over 3 plus 2 pi times n minus 3, which is equal to what? 2 pi plus 2 pi times n minus 2, right, which is 2n minus 4 pi. Okay, so first condition holds. Second one, if you have this condition, you know that for any subset I that you take, the sum of x star I for I in that index set is less than or equal to 2 pi times the size of I. Because every element in x star I is less than 2 pi, right? So in the worst case, it's equal to this. But then by this relation right here, this is less than size of f of I times pi. And that's it. That was the only thing we had to check. So this is the exercise you have to work out to, if you have to believe that this map is injective, I mean, is actually bijective into this subset. And so really anything that's globally flat and everywhere locally flat has some pre-image R. And so now we just check that our desired X star is in that set. And so we have some, there exists some set of radii that will get us there. And so now let's look at how this guides us towards an algorithm for computing the coding vector. So we're looking for the radii. How big should the disks be to make this graph, to embed this graph? And at first, we can just start with any R. Let's just guess one. Let's maybe take something obvious, like give everybody the same radius. And I wanted to sum up to 1, so let me take them all to be 1 over n to 1 over n. Well, once I have an R, I can use the law of cosines to find the angles. Once I find the angles, I can find the curvature. So I want to adjust the radii to move the curvature towards 0. Let's see how you do that. So adjust radii to move. I want to say reduce curvature, but what I really want is I want to reduce the absolute value of the curvature. Because the curvature, if the curvature is positive, I want to push it down. If it's negative, I want to push it up. I want it to be 0, flat. Or 0. Let's look locally at a particular vertex. If I have a vertex V, and I look at, for a particular R, I look at the angle at V, if the sum of those angles is greater than 2 pi, so if I have negative curvature, then I claim I need to increase Ri. Let's see why. So here is the circle for Vi, and it's got some neighbors. And as I start drawing the disks, I can draw the first triangle, and I draw the next triangle, and I draw the next one, and the next one, and at some point, it comes all the way and wraps around. The sum of these angles is more than 2 pi. So if it reconnected, the last one it should try to reconnect to would be this one. So it would draw another one this same size. And if I looked at the sum of its angles, it's more than 2 pi. So if I shrink the radius here, now these balls are going, if I increase the radius, now as I go around, these are going to get pulled around. Can you visualize that? If I fix the radius of all the neighbors and I increase this ball, one ball's radius, then now they're not going to travel as far around. Okay. Yeah. In the other direction, if phi r of vi is less than 2 pi, so if I have positive curvature, then I'm going to decrease ri. And this one is maybe the easier one to draw because it doesn't involve the overlap. It's saying that I have some vi here, and then I drew the neighbors. I'm going to draw this one in red because technically it's the same one as this. It didn't make it all the way around. The sum of these angles is less than 2 pi. If I made this smaller, it can reach around farther. So that tells me, depending on what kind of curvature I see at each vertex, how to change the radius. So if you've heard of curvature flow, this is actually a kind of curvature flow on the on this discrete surface, which is not even a deck, basically. Okay, so the exact numbers that seem to work are a good heuristic now. Because you could just pick some small amount and kind of tweak these. But one trick is to find a radius, you find, let's call it R star, such that if all of the neighbors of Vi had radius R star, then they would have, it would not change this curvature. So if we set some R prime which is the same as R, except that the neighbors of VI are set to R star. VI is set to R star. Then it should be this curvature of R at V, I'm sorry, the angle at R, angle at V for R should be the angle at V for R prime. So we find it's a kind of averaging. So R is the radius that we would be, it's not the average of these radii, but it's the average radius so that if these were all the same, you would still wrap around the exact same amount. Okay. And now you reset Ri to be the radius such that if if all of the neighbors had radius R star, then this would be 2 pi. So it would be pi R prime prime of V equals 2 pi, where R prime prime, put it up here because I'm not sure if you can see it down here, R prime prime is just equal to equal to R I prime except okay, so that tells us how to adjust this radius. And then now you have to iterate. So you do that for all the radii. You adjust them all, and you iterate. And the what's hinted at the fact that this is a polytope is that this really is a convex problem. And so this is just an iterative method to converge to a good set of radii. So you start with your maybe uniform radii. You adjust the curvature, and you keep iterating.
So, can it happen that when you adjust the radii, means you're going to change it by delta, reduce it, or you reduce it, right?
If you can either reduce the radius or increase it.
Increase it.
So
it's a convex function, right? At some point, it should converge to the mean. But then you can overshoot and you can, you know, can it happen that?
Yeah, so in this, yes, so I actually have implemented a version of this where I didn't use this, I just picked some really small epsilon, like you're saying, maybe what you're thinking, which is just say, oh, if the curvature is too big, I just tweak it down a little bit. If it's too small, I increase it a little bit. You do have to kind of renormalize, and you do have to avoid, you have to do something else to avoid some degenerate configurations. So it is true that if I have one radius as one, and I put all the other vertices at one point with radius zero, that sort of satisfies all these conditions, as ugly as that is. And so you have to fix three vertices to start, and that's why I fixed the outer face as a triangle. But I'm pretty sure this will just converge directly. Any questions?